Hello, I'm Candace Burke, host of Community Spotlight on Gila Members Community Radio and Silver City, New Mexico, Kuru 89.1 FM and online at gmcr.org. Our purpose is to enhance public awareness of our featured nonprofit or advocacy organization in Grant County and surrounding area. Today is part two of our interview with Nina Burley. Nina is a notable investigative journalist and author of seven books. I had the joy of hearing her speak last week at Western New Mexico University and look forward to hearing her speak again this Wednesday, November 2nd, 7 p.m. at the university's Global Resource Center. Welcome back to Community Spotlight, Nina.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Candace.
Well, I certainly appreciate you. And I am really looking forward today to talk about your book, Virus. I want to hear all about this book and what you discovered in your research.
Well, thank you for asking. I guess I'll start with the genesis of the book, which is the publisher is a small press, New York-based, called Seven Stories. And they happen to have just been publishing the woman who was who is the Nobel Literature winner this year. So very proud of that. Annie Ernaux, I'm giving a little ad for her, French writer. And so the Seven Stories Press publisher called me in, I guess, around November, late November, December of 2020, and said, hey, would you be interested in writing me a fast book? In other words, finish it soon, on the race to the vaccine, the COVID vaccine. And he wanted it by March, and he wanted a short book. 50,000 words is a short book in nonfiction book world. And I said, yes, I'll do it, but I have to ask you, I'll do it under you know, I need to write about two other things. One is the way that the administration politicized the pandemic and mishandled it, and the effect of that administration on the CDC and the health departments. And then secondly, I want to write a chapter about the proliferation of conspiracy theories around COVID and around the vaccine. And he said, yes. So we hashed it out for about 2 hours, and then I went to work. And the first thing I did was I hired an assistant, a Stanford kind of genetic science PhD student, to be my like genetic science for dummies advisor, and started with her. And then I lined up some interviews, interviewed the MIT chemist, I believe he's a biochemist, who was at the top of Moderna and has many, many patents. I interviewed him, and then I interviewed some other folks, experts in conspiracy, misinformation, pandemic preparedness people in the United States. And then I sat down to write about it. And what did I learn? Well, start with the first chapter, which is about the, I call it Smash the State, and it's about the Trump administration's response to the pandemic. Now, we all were experiencing the way the government was handling the pandemic from the very beginning. We remember those days. They may have started to blur in our memory because so many other crazy things happened after that, like January 6th, the insurrection and things like that. We stopped, you know, other chaotic things happened later.
Mind-boggling, wasn't it? Just mind-boggling.
Mind-boggling. So if you will go back in memory to the very beginning of the, you know, the word comes out of China that there's this thing that's very dangerous, and it's around New Year's of 2020. And, you know, we're all just sort of celebrating the new decade and the election year, and everybody's busy and assuming that we're just going to skate through this like we have everything else in this country for so long while the other parts of the world suffer. Well, then we start realizing, oh, maybe not. They're cruise ships. The people are filled, you know, cruise ships, and people are sick on these cruise ships. And then you started to see the response coming out of the White House, which almost the first things out of the president's mouth were, well, it's not as bad as the flu, or the flu is worse. And then that, of course, is picked up by these misinformation nodes at Fox News, which then promotes the idea. And you saw Ingraham and people like that promoting the idea that, well, it's not really that bad. It's a hoax. Sean Hannity. I mean, there were chyrons running on Fox all the time about hoax, about, you know, it's not so bad. And then almost the first thing out of the president's mouth after that was when the cruise ship wanted to dock at San Francisco with sick passengers. And he said, I like my numbers low. And that's was referring to the, of course, the COVID count. And that was really what set the tone for the administration's response to what was going on. And so one of the things that I learned was that, and I think this was widely known at the time, but probably forgotten, is that the there had been a conference on the, you know, dangers of pandemics sometime in 2019. And there had been some kind of analysis done at which it was determined that the nation that was most prepared for a pandemic was our country, the United States. And there was a reason for that, because we have all this great science here. We have these incredible institutions with great brains in them. And we have the technology to deal with communicating information to people that they might need. And we have a community of what they called the pandemic preparedness community. And the pandemic preparedness community consisted of a lot of people in, let's say, academia and in medical institutions who also would communicate with their cohorts or counterparts inside the CDC and the Homeland Security, HHS. And what had happened was January, February rolls around, and these pandemic preparedness people in the United States are all on this kind of red zone email situation where they're in a group, and there's an emergency emerging, and they're all in this email group, and they're communicating with each other, and they're talking about what's happening. And they were ready to sort of implement and advise the administration. But what had happened was, in the Trump years, the CDC and the HHS, the agencies that deal with public health, had been, well, experts had been left swinging in the wind, a lot of attrition, they weren't replaced. What they did with the public health agencies is, as you know, everybody knows, the Trump election relied heavily on white evangelical Christian voters, and Trump was going to pay them back. And one of the ways that they paid them back is that they put evangelicals in charge of HHS and CDC. And what a lot of people don't know is that Redfield and Birx, who were the CDC, the faces of the CDC, in addition to Fauci of NIAID, those two are evangelical Christians. And Alex Azar, who ran the HHS, also an evangelical Christian. So now that doesn't mean that Birx and Redfield weren't actually medical people. They are. They got into medicine. They got into the pandemic or public health world, I should say, through the avenue of fighting AIDS. Now, why were they attracted to fighting AIDS? Well, because they're interested in the moral aspect of gay culture, and they're trying to save, you know. So that's. That's not to say that they weren't legitimately interested in fighting AIDS, but there was a moral aspect to their interest in this business. And then fundamentally, if you're a fundamentalist Christian, you think that there's a supernatural being that's in charge of everything. And that maybe that supernatural being is, you know, visiting the guilty with some punishment for their sins. So those are that's the mindset of the people running the public health agencies. And furthermore, the real reason why they would give the public health agencies to these folks is that they could police reproductive rights. So almost immediately after after Trump came in, for example, the HHS used to have under Obama a kind of a button on the front page, I think, saying having something to do, I believe, with teen pregnancy or having connections to Planned Parenthood. I'm forgetting what exactly it was now, but it had to do with your reproductive rights. And almost immediately, like the day after Trump came in, the HHS erased that button or erased what it linked to and replaced it with what they were calling religious liberty claims. And you could, if you were a pharmacist or a nurse and a Catholic, you know, a Catholic nurse or a pharmacist evangelical who didn't believe in giving girls Plan B or abortion, you could, or, you know, selling wedding cakes to gay marriages, you could click on that button and that would lead you to some kind of assistance where they could get you legal help to say, no, I'm religiously opposed to this and I don't want to do it. And so the government immediately tilted in that direction as a payback for evangelical Christians getting Trump elected. So that's your backdrop on what was going on at these health agencies when the pandemic preparedness community outside the government realized red flag, you know, sirens screaming, we need to communicate, we need to get everybody on board, all hands on deck and agree on how to deal with this. So they didn't have people in these agencies that they could speak to. And I have, you know, one of the most prominent pandemic preparedness public health people in New York explain this to me, and it's just appalling. So that's one of the backdrops. Then the next thing that was going on in the Trump administration response, of course, always the backdrop was it's an election year, right? And they didn't want to muck up the economy because obviously, as we see right now,
Trump was obsessed with being reelected. So he wanted to make sure the economy looked
exactly better. You know, I mean, James Carville famously said, you know, it's the economy, stupid. And obviously that's true. You know, if you can convince, if people are upset about the economy, they're not going to vote for the person in charge. So they needed to keep that rolling, steaming along. And of course, that was not going to happen. Like once you got into a lockdown, once you realized, well, New York City waves of death, you had to shut everything down. And then that waves of death that afflicted New York and say, well, Seattle also, I think, was one of the cities that was hit early, that once the country, the governors got together and realized, you know, some of them that, okay, it's safe for my state to shut down. We have to shut everything down right now and schools shut. Of course, the economy grinds to a halt and they didn't want that because that was going to affect their chances for reelection. So they were fighting against all of that. That's why they wanted to downplay it. It was a hoax. It was just the flu. But also the other thing you have to remember about the Trump administration, and this is why I called Chapter One Smash the State, is as that is a quote from Steve Bannon, the ideologue behind the Trump election early on. Yeah. And smashing the state the administrative state. They want the federal government to shrink to nothing. And this is also, you know, the Koch brothers. This is a long process, a long goal, long game goal of the right to get rid of the administrative state so that they can not be taxed, so they can keep all their money. I mean, that's basically what's behind it. So smashing the state was the goal. And once you had the apparatus of the state in your hands, in this case, the treasury, the money, the tax, you know, the money and the power, what the Trump administration also, the people that were also part of the ideological world, the twin pillars, I say, of the Trump administration were the evangelical Christians on one side and vulture capitalists on the other. And so what they had, the vulture capitalists love, is chaos, because out of chaos you can make money. So there was this chaos breaking out. And that's where, you know, Jared Kushner comes in, and they start, you know, bringing in their Silicon Valley friends to set up a separate data sheet, data collection on COVID deaths, let's say. They set up this kind of like sham PPE delivery, where they were going to have these flights like the Berlin, what was it called? The flights to Berlin. I can't remember the airlift. They were going to airlift all of these masks and things over here and like distribute them because there were shortages. So they had this airlift thing going, which was just one big media scam. And then people were actually being, you know, making money off it. And now you see the GAO and the, they call it the pandemic response. Oh God, what is it called? PRAC. It's all of these inspector generals of various agencies in the government are still sorting through the fraud that was committed under this Trump administration and its minions in terms of this the pandemic and how they distributed money to their cronies and how those cronies used it. And so there was that. So there was a money-making opportunity. There was a religious aspect to it, pay back the Christian evangelicals.
And they threw all of us.
We watched all of it.
And they threw us all under the bus.
And as you, and you know, I mean, you saw that kind of that like Uber capitalism thing when they were trying to get ventilators early on.
Oh, yes.
And they ran short on ventilators in New York. And then the, you know, the Trump literally said something like, you know, I want the governors to compete for this, you know, like nothing, you know, it's pricing is. Oh, I know. They were trying to get cheaper ones, and he was saying, well, no, price is always an issue, and you know, it's supply and demand. You know, not like let's get the government together, FEMA, and supply people with this needed, well, what they thought was needed, and they were very wrong about the ventilator thing. I think that they didn't understand what the COVID was early on. That's a whole other issue. So they decided, you know, that they would approach this with a capitalist, Uber capitalist, vulture capitalist response to how can we make money off it. And then finally, their communications, as you remember, you know, every time Fauci would get on TV, Trump would elbow him out of the way and disagree with him. And we watched all this happening with our jaws dropping to the floor. And then also, in addition, everybody was panicked because, well, there was a deadly virus. Were we going to catch it? And then that was chapter one. And then the next two chapters, the history of vaccine, and then also the medical landmark that the mRNA vaccine is. I learned a lot about that. And I'll just say the history of vaccines in this, goes back to the 17th century or so with the smallpox. Smallpox vaccine. The word vaccine comes from vaca, cow, because that's what they were. You know, they cowpox was a milder version or related to smallpox, and they realized, wow, if people got cowpox, they didn't get as sick from smallpox. What's going on there? So they started inoculating people with vaccine, eventually made of cowpox, and that was saving people's lives. That was the very beginning of the vaccine era. And it's only been 300 years, right? So they started then, and those vaccines were, they didn't even really understand like what diseases were, how they were caught. No, they didn't have they didn't have lenses until the 1800s where you could actually see the little creatures that were killing you. It took until they laid ground lenses that made people human eyeballs able to see cholera and tuberculosis. And so it's fascinating because it's a very short period of time since the human race has been able to protect itself at all from anything. And now in the 20th century, we have vaccines for, 16 different things that babies get. And we don't even know what they are. Like our generation doesn't even know what diphtheria is. But in the 1920s, literally that recently, people would have remembered their children dying or their siblings dying or being horrendously sick of childhood diseases that we can't even, talk about now. We don't even know what they are. So that's one thing I learned. We are an incredibly spoiled generation. We are the safest, medically most protected generation in human history. And so all of these people who are trying to DIY it on vaccines are just, to me, spoiled babies. And they're causing a lot of harm, but they're also just spoiled babies. I can rattle on about this forever.
I'm just still, always amazed how much vaccine hesitancy is still prevalent. I encounter people on a regular basis who still think that our DNA is being altered. We're magnetic. Yes. We're carrying microchips we're being tracked over the world. And
yes. So that's the next thing that I addressed. Let me just say one thing about the genetic medicine behind the mRNA, because that is a misconception that it affects your DNA. That is not what it's doing. People hear genetic and they hear RNA and they immediately think, oh, they're making zombies out of us. No, genetic medicine, and this is where science communication becomes so important. It's a foreign language to us. It's called nuclear medicine and it's like nuclear physics. These advances in science have been so rapid and so gigantic, and they cannot be, people are not understanding what they are. The mRNA is not changing your DNA at all. It's just telling your body, here's, if you see this little thing, you want to kill it. It's exactly what the attenuated virus vaccines are from, going back to the smallpox was, except they're not using actual deadly viruses to introduce into your body and say, hey, wake up if you see anything like this. Now they're just synthetic. And it's a bit of strand of material that just basically goes away. It's not changing your DNA. It doesn't have anything to do with your DNA. It has to do with the virus. And recently they have, this was under investigation for years, 20 years. The reason that they had not made these vaccines before, they knew that this was possible, was that for big pharma, vaccines don't make any money. So they were playing around with this new technology to make really expensive cancer drugs, because that's how big pharma makes money on stuff. They weren't interested in the vaccine. And the one thing that the Trump administration did right, and which they ridiculously don't even take credit for now, is they threw all this money at big pharma, forcing them or encouraging them to move forward with this vaccine and this type of vaccine and try it out and use it. And now what's going to happen is it's an absolute medical landmark in future, as in this case, within weeks of them understanding the genetic map of this deadly virus, they knew how to make a vaccine that would stop it, that would maybe not eradicate it. It's not eradicated. And that's another part of the science miscommunication that happened here. People thought it was the silver bullet that would eradicate coronavirus forever from the human system, and it's not. It's keeping you from going in the hospital. That's it. You can still catch it. This thing is built on the common cold. The common cold has not been cured, but they have made a vaccine that can make you less likely to go to the hospital, and you should take it because you don't want to go to the hospital, and you don't want to lose you don't want to lose a year of your life with long COVID and not be able to breathe and or die. So. Anyway, moving
forward. That's an interesting point you're making, Anina, because so many people who aren't getting vaccinated or, you know, they're more likely to buy into the conspiracy theories rather than science. They, you know, they don't understand that there are more medical, long-term medical complications.
Yeah.
With getting COVID than any reaction they would get to the vaccine.
I mean, the one, you know, again, to my study and my research into the history of vaccine, there always were problems. There have been accidents. There have been negative effects of vaccines. I mean, the polio, there was a terrible accident out here in the West, actually, where a company made polio vaccine for this national campaign, and they made a mistake in the lab, and there was live vaccine, and some children were paralyzed by the vaccine. And then that actually kicked off a new era in product liability law in the United States, which to this day exists. The vaccine conspiracy theories. So you have these things there are many different sort of reasons why these conspiracy theories held. And my book, what I have out now is an updated version of the book, which went on sale in August. It's a paperback now. And you can, of course, get it on your Kindle or electronic, but it's updated with a new chapter about uncertainty and science and uncertainty and the conspiracy theories. Because in 2020, when I was writing this, and then in 21, when it was first published, all those conspiracy theories that you've just sort of alluded to, you know, the magnetic, the Bill Gates chip, and the DNA altering aspect, all of that stuff was out there. But I did not think that after a year of the vaccine being widely available to Americans, that you would still have this cohort of like a third of Americans going, it might mess my DNA up, or it's a Bill Gates, you know, theory. It's a Bill Gates conspiracy to track us. I didn't think that would continue on. And then what we did see happen was that in contrast to what you would think the Republicans would have done, which is to say, hey, our president that we loved so much, who really didn't lose the election, quote unquote, to them, he made this thing happen. They put this money up, the federal government money, came and it created this thing that's making everybody stay out of the hospital and everybody should go get it. Instead, what they did was they carried on with this, well, you know, maybe ivermectin dewormer medicine is better, or, you know, folks are saying that you could take hydrochloroquine, you know, which was early on one of the Trump things. Just maybe you could just try these other remedies. And you know, the vaccine is part of like some kind of federal program in cahoots with Bill Gates to track you or to hurt you. And they let those things go. They didn't, you know, like Sean Hannity, and for sure, you know, the Fox News wasn't even letting people in their building without the vaccine. But these nodes, the misinformation nodes of the right, carried on with this sort of idea that not having the vaccine, rejecting the vaccine, was like some kind of like signal of liberation, and that it went along with rejecting the mask and like the Marlboro man, you know, as Trump said after he got COVID, don't let it dominate you. Well, you wouldn't let it dominate you if you were him and you got this magical cocktail of drugs that was not available to the rest of the country that saved him.
Exactly.
He was literally saved by those drugs that at that time you couldn't get if you were dying, gasping your last breath in a hospital gurney. So those theories or those conspiracies and this notion that it's, you know, you should liberate yourself from the vaccine, really have to do with politicizing further the whole issue of the illness for political gain, right? What they were doing was a very cynical operation at the top to sow chaos. And by sowing chaos, what you got was people don't trust the government. They don't trust Biden. Nothing good can happen from having the federal government and FEMA helping you. Nothing good can come out of having a vaccine available to everyone. That's just the federal government's way of manipulating you. And as long as they could keep that chaos going, that would keep the Democrats from being able to say, hey, we kind of fixed something here. You know, look, we got this medicine to you and you're not going to the hospital. So what had been blue COVID, which was killing people in cities where people were packed together, by the summer of 21 was red COVID. Red COVID being, it was killing people now in these areas where they were rejecting the vaccine on the advice of their political leaders. And that's what they did. They have COVID and chaos. And right now, today, we're inches away from the midterms. And a recent poll said, there's a chunk of Americans who think the, quote, country is out of control, unquote. And those people are voting red. They're voting Republican. And they needed that. They needed to have a lot of people thinking it's out of control. It's not working. Things are a mess, and reject, you know, any kind of assistance from the state that should have been smashed by this, you know, ideological operation.
Well, Nina, I can't thank you enough for being here today and telling us about your book. It's a joy to have you back.
Yeah, well, tell your listeners to go have a look at it. It's called Virus, and it is available on Amazon and wherever you buy your books, hopefully at independent bookstores that where you order them.
It's been a pleasure. And I'll be sure to post online how to obtain the book as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome, Nina. Community Spotlight airs every Thursday at 10:30 a.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. You're listening to Community Spotlight on Gila Members Community Radio, Kuru 89.1 FM, in Silver City and online at gmcr.org. I'm Candace Burke. Be well and happy.
Okay, Candace.